Hey everyone, welcome back to Passive Income Pilots. Tate Duryea and Ryan Gibson here talking about insurance today. How you doing, Ryan?
Good. I'm glad I had my insurance on my Cessna 185 because I went to a backcountry runway over the weekend called Stehekin, Washington. If you haven't been there, you've got to put it on your list. It's in Washington. It's a grass strip. It's right in a mountain valley and it is awesome.
I saw the video on your social media. It looked amazing. And was that, did you do a wheel landing or a three pointer on that one?
You know, I did a three pointer. And if you listen closely in the listen closely in the video, you hear me get excited about the landing. And I was like, that was an awesome landing because my landings had been crap. And that one, I got the stall all the way perfect. And you know, those in a tailwheel, you want that tailwheel to touch just ever so slightly before the mains. And I had it dead nuts on. And so I was happy that it's the type of runway where you're flying and you see the runway on descent. You're like, okay, there's the dirt patch in this green mountain valley. And then as you get lower and lower and lower and you get lined up on the approach, it disappears. And so you really have to kind of know how to, and then you have this like kind of 45 degree turn as you're descending at a couple hundred feet off the ground. And then the runway reappears and it's like, it's pretty fat. Yeah. But I tell you what, sounds sporty. Camping, fishing, hiking, really awesome bakery in town. You know, you can get bikes and an ATV and all. And we went to the Stehekin Valley ranch to have dinner and it was amazing. And I would say put that higher. Anyway, I'm excited today to talk about insurance. You know, there's 10 types of insurance that you need to have.
I promise.
Yeah. Yeah. There's 10 types of insurance you need to have. And, you know, we're not giving any tax, legal, or investment advice, obviously. Do your own due diligence, get your own insurance. But we're going to go through 10 types of insurance that an everyday average airline pilot should probably get, or Absolutely. An everyday professional income earner, right? So maybe you're a doctor listening to this and you think, okay, well, I don't need loss of medical insurance for this, but there might be some specialty insurance in your field that you might want to look into in case something happens to you or any extra liability that you may incur. So
Absolutely.
Insurance is always your first line of defense in anything you're doing.
It is. And I know that this is not the most exciting subject, but we have Rod Zabriskie on again from Money Insights Group, who is a trusted advisor and knows the insurance game inside and out. So you've got a consummate professional that's sitting in with us. It is so important, though. It's not something that anybody wants to think about because it's like, you know, insurance is, like I said, not the most exciting thing. You're usually thinking about all the things that could go wrong, which isn't the most fun thing to think about. You know, for yourself, for your family, for your loved ones, it's very important. So with that, I'm excited to get into it.
Let's do it.
Welcome to Passive Income Pilots, where pilots upgrade their money. This is the definitive source for personal finance and investment tactics for aviators. We interview world-renowned experts and share these lessons with the flying community. So if you're ready for practical knowledge and insights, let's roll.
Rod, thank you so much for joining us again. How you been?
Hey, I'm doing great. How about you guys?
Very well. It's a beautiful summer. We're having a good time. I know Ryan was just out flying his tail dragger in the mountains for the 250th birthday of America.
And America.
I was sailing in the Aegean Sea, which was spectacular. How's your summer been?
It's been amazing. Yeah, so far, so good. Actually, Fantastic. Been pleasant weather here in Salt Lake City. It's starting to heat up now, but man, cool June. It was nice.
Oh, it's beautiful in the mountains in the summer. Well, it's been a little while since we brought you on. We wanted to talk about all things insurance today. And so, Ryan, I know we were talking before the show. There really are about 10 categories that high income professionals, particularly airline pilots, should have in their back pocket. So we're going to go through them today and talk about how they work, where to shop for them, so on and so forth.
Yeah, I think you can really put them into a couple of different buckets, right? You have essential insurance, which everybody needs essential insurance. And then you have your insurance that's going to protect your family and your income. And then you've got protecting your assets, like what you accumulate in wealth. And we're going to talk about that type of insurance. The next bucket is specialized planning. This is things like long-term care insurance, as an example. And then lastly, professional specific insurance. And so I think as pilots, we all know that kind of goes into the loss of medical, but we're going to get into each of these categories today and really excited to kind of drill into your shopping list of not only what insurance you need as a professional aviator, but also where to go get it and how to buy it.
Absolutely. So with that, we want to start with health insurance. I think, you know, we're very fortunate as airline pilots to have these amazing careers with great health plans. Ryan, you want to talk at all about airline health policies?
Yeah, I mean, I think this falls under your essential bucket, right? So you're going to have insurance that you absolutely need. And so at health insurance at its basic need is for catastrophic events, right? You're driving along in your car and you end up in an accident for whatever reason, and you have a catastrophic life-threatening emergency. And this is going to protect you from bankruptcy. The number one thing that insurance does, right? And so if you go to the hospital and your medical bills are millions of dollars, like you probably don't have millions of dollars lying around to pay bills, or maybe you do, and that drains out the last bit of your bank account. But this is what's going to protect you against catastrophic events. Now, where the way of the industry is that most employers are going to some kind of what's called a high deductible plan. So you're going to have a massive deductible each year, or you're going to have a low deductible. And it's no secret that if you have a very high deductible, that you're going to probably pay less per month in fees, right? And it's good for everybody because you're not paying as much, and maybe the employer is not contributing as much. However, you're going to be out of pocket more until health insurance kind of kicks in. So that's been the way that the industry has gone. You know, when I got hired at the regionals, I was, you know, fortunate enough to be at an airline, Air Wisconsin, that had a Cadillac plan. Right. And our premiums were a little bit higher, but we had like no out of pocket expenses.
Right.
But, you know, it's kind of funny. You look back and in my 20s, I was at the regionals and I had this Cadillac plan and I was super healthy. I never went to the doctors. I had no kids. So I had this amazing, you know, low deductible plan, but I never really put it to use. And I never really had the option to have a high deductible plan, which would have lowered my monthly payment and then had effectively less out of pocket per year. Now, when you go to start having children and you start having more expenses in your life, you know, maybe that high deductible plan is not as popular because, you know, your kids are going to be going to the doctors more and more things are going to happen in your life, right? And so you're more quickly going to hit that. But the biggest benefit there is that you get the health savings account, right? The HSA that comes along with it. And then you get that triple tax advantage, which you can put money in tax-free, you can take money out tax-free, and the money grows tax-free. And you can also spend money on medical expenses with your HSA that are going to be, you know, not taxed, right, effectively. And you can invest that money. So I think the high deductible plans are really what's taking over the industry and what we're going to see more of from an employer's perspective and, you know, as an employee.
Couldn't agree more. Rod, you're the insurance expert here. Anything to add on that?
Yeah. So it's kind of an ironic thing because what was great for you, Ryan, is when you had the low deductible or basically all expenses covered when you were lower income, younger, just kind of figuring things out. That's kind of the irony of it, is that someone who has more money can afford a higher deductible, pay less premium and have a higher deductible. And I think this is going to be true across the other types of insurance we're going to talk about as well, right?
Yeah.
Just for anyone out there that might not be super clear on what a deductible is, do we want to just cover that very briefly?
Sure. Yeah. So basically a deductible is first dollar expenses you're paying out of pocket. And then once you've paid out of pocket, then the insurance kicks in. And there are usually some things that are paid for before you have to pay the deductible. So on the health insurance topic, you know, your healthy visits almost across the board are covered before you have to pay anything in order to your deductible. The insurance companies are trying to be smart, keep you healthy as, you know, as much as possible. So they'll pay for that before you have to hit the deductible. But if it's a sick visit, surgery, whatever, ER visit, then you're paying those expenses first until you've hit your deductible.
Well, this ties in very nicely to the next category, which is auto insurance. And this is something where a lot of times you can choose what that deductible is. You can choose a cheap plan that has a very high deductible, meaning you're going to come out of pocket, you know, thousands of dollars potentially before that insurance kicks in. Or you can have a more expensive policy where you don't come out of pocket and your insurance kicks in right away. Do you have any wisdom in terms of which way to lean on that?
Yeah, I mean, I just as a disclaimer, I'm life and health licensed, not as much on the property and casualty. But yeah, I mean, I feel like kind of the same way I just talked about, where when I had less income and it would be a it'd be a much harder hit on me to have a whatever $3,000 deductible as opposed to $1,000 or $1,500. I paid a higher premium to get that, but I could afford the monthly expense better than I would have if I had had something happen and all of a sudden I have to come up with more money as a deductible. But the more, you know, higher the income, and again, I'm not saying 3,000 is nothing, but relatively speaking, I can pull out of my emergency fund 3,000 bucks to pay the deductible. Well, now I might as well pay a lower premium.
You know, one thing I wanted to cover before we got too far away from health insurance is, you know, just to make sure that people understand what an FSA is versus an HSA. And I know that, you know, a lot of people listening probably rolling their eyes that they know what it is, but you have this thing called a flexible spending account, which you can actually put, I believe, as much as $5,000 tax-free into. Now, that money doesn't get invested anywhere, and it isn't necessarily anything other than a tax strategy to pay for medical expenses that incur throughout the year, to include dependent care. So like my kids are in daycare or preschool, whatever it might be. If you're expending that, you can easily take a few months of that dependent care and you can get that reimbursed, and you essentially save the taxes that you would have otherwise paid on that $5,000. But you got to put that $5,000 away. And the worst part is if you don't use it, you lose it. So you literally could be putting $5,000 away, not even realize it. And then if you don't actually spend it and get reimbursed, you literally lose that money. Mm-hmm. And I know some employers, they let you go to like March to declare. So it doesn't have to be right at the end of the year, but that's kind of goes into your end of the year checklist. Like, did I drain my FSA account? Now that's different, completely different than the HSA that I described earlier, which is that triple tax advantaged. You don't have to spend that money. In fact, I almost encourage you, try not to spend any of that money on your health expenses. Try to let that bad boy grow into a nice nest egg and become a supercharged kind of like Roth IRA, but with a better benefit of you get to deduct the money as it goes in as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we did a full episode on HSAs with Mark Kohler, if you go back and look for that one.
All right, let's move on. Rod, keeping into the topic of essentials, let's talk about homeowners insurance or renter's insurance if you're renting an apartment or renting a house from somebody.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's essential because we live, right? Things can happen. Maybe we'll hit on renters first because I think it's a little more simple because as a renter, you're not responsible for the building and the property and things like that. It's kind of what you're bringing in and, you know, living with in the place. So if something happens, then you get coverage to help you, you know, replace those things if needed.
Yeah, I love that how you distinguish that because it's really important distinction. You know, when you rent somebody's building, even when you're a self-storage tenant in one of my buildings, you have to have renter's insurance. Now, I have insurance on the building, property casualty insurance. So as the operator, we insure the building, no different than your landlord insures the home that you're renting or your apartment that you're renting. But your stuff in the unit is now insured through a policy. And some tenants or landlords will require you to have a policy because they want to make sure that your belongings are protected in the event that there's a fire or something that happens in the building. Your stuff might not be covered if the building burns down, even if it's the landlord's fault sometimes, right? So you want to make sure that you've got protection against your stuff.
For sure. And then obviously the difference is if then you switch over to homeowners insurance, well, you own the place and you're living there. So it's going to cover the structure itself, and you're going to want to tack on extra to cover the your belongings as well.
And this, of course, when you're talking about homeowners insurance, usually people are going to have debt on the property. Most people don't buy a home 100% cash. And so during the time that the bank, you know, you have a mortgage with the bank on your home, of course, they're going to require that you have insurance because the bank actually usually is the largest owner of the home, right? I mean, if your house is worth $1 million and you owe $700,000 on it, the bank actually owns more of that property than you do. And so they want to make sure that they cover their investment. They want to make sure that their investment in that property is covered. And that's why they actually make the policy payments for you. They pay typically through an escrow account. They're going to be paying the insurance and the property taxes, because if the property taxes don't get paid, guess what? The government takes away your property and the bank loses their investment in that asset. And the same thing, if it burns down, they're not going to have any recourse if there was no insurance on that. And so that's why you likely have seen in the past, if an insurance policy lapses, you're immediately getting a call from your lender saying, hey, action required. If you don't immediately put a policy on the house, we're going to buy one for you. And it's going to be more expensive than something that you shopped around for.
You know, one of the things that, about homeowner's insurance, I think that is not discussed is like sometimes when you look at your homeowner's policy, like you bought $1 million house and you get your homeowner's insurance and you look at the fine print, it's not going to cover you to $1 million. And that's because they're only going to insure you typically to the replacement value of the home. And so the other thing is watch out for your policy. Sometimes if your homes are built, you know, a long time ago and they're not up to building codes, your insurance policy might not cover that outdated electrical system. You might have to come out of pocket to replace it if it, you know, if it was in a fire because it's not, you know, fully covered. And then the last thing I'll say about homeowners insurance, it's kind of an I gotcha, is don't assume that water damage is covered in blanket, right? You know, don't assume that anything that ruins your home is going to cover you, right? Like places like where I live, like in Tate, I think you have the same, and maybe even Rod to an extent, like earthquake insurance is a completely different line item that's not covered. And then if, you know, flood, you know, usually that has to be a flood that is a real flood, like not just like your home flooded, right? It has to be like your neighborhood flooded. Now you're covered.
Right.
So there's a lot of I gotchas there in homeowners insurance that you just have to be really careful about.
There really are. And we've talked about this before, how, you know, this is why you want to be working with a good insurance broker, because typically a broker is going to be able to get you a better rate and it will cover the cost of working with that broker versus just going directly with the insurance company. A broker is going to be able to walk you through all these things. And really what we've talked about on this show before is the best brokers to go to are, you know, small to medium sized shop in your local area. Call around, look for Google reviews or Yelp reviews, and work with that broker so that they can understand your exact situation, make sure that you're covered on all these things.
And be really clear with them as you're walking through what's covered and how it's covered, because you could have someone else come in and be like, hey, I'll give you a competitive quote.
Right.
It may not be, I mean, it may be great on the price, but it may not really have the same coverage. I'd be really careful on that as well.
Yeah, I love that.
I love what you were saying, Ryan, about, you know, your neighborhood flooding versus a pipe burst and your house flooded. Those are two completely separate events.
Yeah. You know, Rod, I want to shift gears to protecting your assets. You know, the listeners and the pilots here have, you know, accumulated a lot of wealth in the last decade. And now they're thinking about, hey, if I'm walking down the street and someone does something and I have some personal liability to how I respond to something, or maybe I accidentally run over somebody or get into an accident, whatever it is, you know, can you talk about kind of how to protect your assets and your wealth that you're building through insurance?
Yeah. And a lot of that does come through the homeowner's policy and, or the auto policy, because that's probably the likely more expensive thing. If I'm driving down the road and I cause an accident, it's probably less expensive to replace my car as it would be if I hit somebody and all of a sudden they have whatever, hundreds of thousands of dollars of medical expenses, right? So again, notice what your maximum coverages are on those things. And then similarly with the homeowners, if I had whatever, someone slips on ice in front of my house, breaks their leg, they're coming to me and I'm, you know, going to my homeowner's policy, that the liability portion of that. But again, it's going to have limits. So you want to know what those limits are. And by extension, I think the easiest insurance decision for anybody to make is to have an umbrella policy.
Yeah.
And real quickly, what that means is that I have limitations on what the insurance company will cover. And, but again, it like you said earlier, it could be millions of dollars. And if my policy is covering 800,000, now all of a sudden I could be out, you know, seven figures.
Right.
Out of pocket beyond what they've already paid for, unless I have an umbrella policy. And they're super inexpensive. Basically, what you're saying is across the board. So for my personal policy, I have my auto insurance covers up to certain whatever. Liability on my homeowners covers up to whatever. And then I say, well, I want to tack on an additional $3 million or $5 million or whatever it is above that. And it covers an umbrella because it covers all of those things if I ever exceeded any of those limits. And it's a few hundred bucks a year. I mean, it's really inexpensive to add umbrella. If you do not have that, I think that is the first call you should make right now.
Definitely.
Yeah. Personal umbrella is critical. And You know, one of the things, you know, we talk a lot about on the show about asset protection and, you know, standing up LLCs and definitely making sure you have, you know, hidden assets behind your different, you know, Wyoming and Delaware and all this other stuff, right? But here's the thing. When you get sued, it doesn't matter if you have an LLC, right? The first thing you're going to start doing is you're going to call your attorney and they're going to say, okay, send me a $10,000 retainer and I'm $1,500 an hour. And then a few phone calls later, you're $8,000, $10,000, $20,000 into, you know, working with your attorney just to prepare to fight against whatever you're getting, right? And so insurance policies will actually sometimes cover litigation costs, or it'll limit your out-of-pocket exposure to that litigation. So you might be in it for the first $25,000. And then after that, insurance kicks in and then we'll start litigating, you know, paying for litigation expenses on your behalf. Now, the reality is after $25,000, the insurance company is going to be very quickly eager to settle because they don't want to continue paying all these litigation costs and go through a bunch of risk to just basically end up in settlement anyway. So that's kind of a disappointing part and truth behind some of those insurance policies. But I appreciate you sharing that.
But the beauty of it is that it's their legal team that's coming and participating, right? They know what they're doing. You don't have to go find your own and whatever. It's a big deal.
A couple questions on umbrella before we move on. Number one, based on net worth, is there any rules of thumb that you use, Rod, in order to right size your umbrella policy to your net worth?
The company that I'm working with, first question I ask is, what's the max that you'll allow? And 3 million might be it, 5 million might be it. But like initially I got a million and it was whatever, $250 a year. And then I was like, well, what's the max? So it's 3 million. Well, how much is that? It's like 350. Right. Okay, great. Well, that's an easy decision, right?
Understood. So, well, the next one would be, you know, if you're not already working with an insurance agent, where's the best place to find an umbrella policy?
It's going to come from the exact same company that's covering your home and auto. In my experience, there may be other exceptions to that, but that's usually it's just a tack on for that.
Excellent.
And I have a clarifying question. So when you say I have a $3 million personal umbrella policy, what is that $3 million for? What does that do?
Yeah. So I'll go with the example I said earlier. So let's say I caused some injury to somebody through in a car accident and my limit is 800,000 of, you know, personal medical coverage. But their bills end up being $1.5 million. So the first 800,000 is going to be covered through the auto policy. But as soon as I exceed that, then it spills over into my umbrella policy. So I have up to an additional $3 million on top of wherever it came from, whether it was the auto or whether it was the homeowners or something else, whatever those liability limits are, I'm just getting an additional $3 million above that.
And this will affect the price of umbrella as well as what other insurance products you have in your quiver, right? And what the limits are on those.
Yep. They'll know, again, it's the same company, so they'll see all of your, what's your deductible, what are the limits. So if you've gone minimal, I want the lowest limits, I want, you know, whatever, minimum coverage, then it will cost more to add the umbrella.
Yeah.
You know, Tate, you asked an interesting question. You said, hey, you know, everybody kind of thinks about, like, as I grow my net worth, I should grow the size of my umbrella policy. And the example you just gave, Rod, of the accident not covering that, I mean, why is it important, or should we be thinking about scaling our umbrella to our net worth? I mean, I understand the example you gave, which is like, oh, it's only $50 more or whatever. It makes sense to get more for a lower cost. But why should it be important to think about scaling that, and why, based on net worth?
To me, I used to think it was about net worth, partly because a million sounded like a really big number when I got my $1 million umbrella coverage, right? And I guess the more my net worth grew, the more it felt like, oh, these are real numbers above a million, right? And yet when you think about it, just in terms of really what could happen, and again, especially medical bills, I mean, exceeding a million isn't hard in right, that kind of a scenario, right? So to me, now it's less about net worth and just more about like, well, the cost is like nothing.
If you have a lower net worth, it might be worth, I mean, that means you have fewer assets to pay out of a pocket expense. You almost want more in that case.
Yeah.
It's kind of an interesting, I've never really thought about it that way. That's great.
Yep, that's a good point.
Well, speaking of, think about getting disabled and disability. Let's talk about disability insurance. I know this is your specialty, Rod. You want to kind of give us your wisdom on that?
Yeah, I mean, here is another one, kind of like health insurance. You look at what you have with your employer or have available to you. Sometimes it's built into your contract. You have it. Sometimes you have to opt in, and then you pay some premium that's deducted from your paycheck to cover it. And in this case, you'll have long-term disability coverage and short-term. And basically what happens is with a traditional kind of long-term disability policy, you're picking how long you have to be disabled before that kicks in. And often it's 6 months. Sometimes it can be as low as like 3 months, but that's a long time, right? If I'm disabled now and I call my company and they say, okay, great, it's going to kick in 6 months. It's like, okay, well, what am I going to do between now and then? And that's where short-term disability policies can kick in. And that's usually through the employer.
Right. And I was going to say, where this manifests itself a lot as airline pilots is, you know, you're on a ski trip and you huck that cliff a little bit too hard, you break your leg, and all of a sudden you can't fly. And you're out for, let's say, 6 months. This is something where if you're newer to the airlines, call your union rep and walk them through a few scenarios and say, hey, how does our insurance work at X airline? Airlines differ. Some airlines have really great long-term disability insurance. Some don't. It all depends. Am I going to be burning through all my sick leave? Do I need to keep more sick leave in my bank because our disability isn't as good at my airline? Or is my disability really good and so I can run my sick leave a little bit thinner? Have that conversation with your union rep. Your union rep will know who to contact or who to put you in touch with at your airline. These are things you really want to understand. What happens if, you know, especially if you are head of household and this is your single income stream, if something happens to you on a ski trip, you know, what does the next 6 months or 12 months look like?
Yeah. And I also wanted to say this too, which is like, whenever you're doing an activity, I love what you said, Tate. You should be thinking, if something happened to me, who would pay for it? Right? like if I'm in a skiing accident, who's going to pay for it? And I'm not just talking about the broken leg in the hospital. I'm talking about the loss of revenue you're going to have for 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. Like these are really important decisions, right? I would imagine a lot of pilots listening, some of them have working spouses, but a lot of times they're the single source of income for an entire family. And so like, you want to be able to go enjoy these activities and know what you're covered against when something bad happens.
Absolutely.
And I mean, that's how I would go about it. I'd be like, what do I enjoy doing? I like flying small airplanes. I like skiing. I like, you know, going for jogs, right? And just kind of, I hate to say it, but think about all the things that could go wrong in your life and then just kind of unpack that with your union too, right? Get your insurance union. I love that you get your union rep involved. You know, kind of walk through the options and just make sure you have coverage on all these things. It's super important.
Absolutely.
And make sure you know what is covered and how much. And if you get the answer back and you're not really satisfied, oh, it's going to cover your whatever 40% of your income, then you might go out and buy a personal policy to supplement that.
Right.
Yeah. And that's the kind of stuff that we do, or we'll help people do that. And then when you get into that category, you start thinking about what they call own occupation versus any occupation. You want to pay really close attention to that. All that means is if I have any occupation coverage and I can, for whatever, something happens and I can't do my primary work, but I could go out and whatever, work in a call center somewhere, then they're saying, well, no, you don't get coverage because you can work somewhere. Mm-hmm. You want own occupation. Anyone who's highly trained, you know, has specific expertise is going to want own occupation, because if what that means is if I'm disabled and can no longer do my primary occupation, even if I could go out and do something else, it's going to kick in and cover me.
Excellent. That's a good nugget right there.
Yeah. Speaking of becoming disabled and not being able to work, let's talk about life loss of medical insurance. Aviation specific related for those pilots out there who are contemplating, hey, should I add this additional pay stub deduction to my loss of medical insurance?
Yeah, you know, Ryan, you and I are both younger guys. It's probably not something that we have thought about too much up until this point of our careers, but you know, it is something that actually I need to go and look at, because we're the years are ticking by, and you know, I mean, it's a massive income stream that, you know, you go in every 6 months and all you need is for a doctor to say, hey, this parameter's out, and you're not flying anymore. And so I think loss of medical insurance is something that everybody should have, and that's going on my to-do list.
Yeah, I mean, typically it's a percentage of your final average earnings, right? If you lose your medical, and they'll look back over 12 consecutive months or something like that and kind of come up with a formula. And I admit I'm not the expert on that. One thing I do want to say, though, is if you're flying for the airlines, it's something that you want to have. You know, you want to have loss of medical insurance. I think that's one thing, again, that is a career-ending thing. And we've had multiple episodes with aviation examiners and doctors. I love the advice we have from the one, I can't remember the name of the doc, but you know, they have an aviation medical simulator that you can go through before you actually take your real FAA medical exam. And I would take that very seriously. Some of the things you can get your testing out of the way before you even actually go to your real medical, so you could kind of, you know, change course if something is not quite right. So
that's right. And that was Dan Munlux. You can go and look that episode up. We've had him on twice.
Yeah. And I think there's gold in that. And I think as aviation professionals, I think loss of medical insurance is too often debated when it should be kind of a staple in what you do. And then I think people should treat their medical exam like a check ride.
Absolutely.
Not like a check ride in today's AQP environment, but more like a check ride from like the 90s, where you had to know the weight of the battery and, you know, every little fuel molecule and everything. Like, treat it like that, like a very serious, like pass fail, you know, bad day, you know, you got to know everything. Like, that's how serious I would take it. Now, I'm not saying people don't take their check ride seriously, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it's a lot more forgiving, it feels like, but medical exams, I feel like, are not forgiving, and they can really put an end to your high earning career. And so I would put a lot of emphasis there.
Definitely.
Let's switch gears to something that's a little less known. And we all hear the Aflac commercials. Rod, we were catching up before the show on this. Talk about what's Aflac? What's going on with these commercials and why are they relevant to us?
Yeah. So the category of insurance that's called indemnity insurance. And all that means is that if something happens, you get a check in the mail. So for example, a typical type of policy might be, if there are particular things that you're concerned about, cancer, heart attack, you know, things like that, then you can get an indemnity policy. And all it says is, if you get cancer, we're writing you a check. So it might be whatever, 20 grand or something that comes to you. And again, it's not health insurance. It has nothing, it's not coordinating with your health insurance, has nothing to do with that. It's not even directly paying the bills. It just says, if X happens, you get a check for whatever the number is that's stated in the policy. And so it could be, like I said, diagnosis related, but it could also be event related. So you need a trip to the ER, that you get the $2,500 check, or if you, whatever, doctor visits, that, like, it can get pretty granular. And so you can build in a la carte or as a package, you know, that those things that you're most concerned about, it if they happen. And going back to kind of our conversation about the deductible, if you have a high deductible plan, the kinds of things that are likely to push you towards higher expenses, you might think about an indemnity policy that would help cover those things.
Now, why would someone get an indemnity policy versus typical health insurance? And for the airline pilot that's out there who already has health insurance through the airline, why would they want an indemnity policy? It almost feels like if I win this Polymarket bet, I get paid. It's like, you know, all right, I'm gonna bet that I'm gonna get diabetes by this date, and if I do, I win. You know, it's
I love how you said diabetes. I just made my day, Tate.
Yeah. Okay. It's a fair question, but I think it goes back to what you were talking about earlier, where when you play those scenarios out. So let's go back to what you were saying, Ryan, where, hey, think about when you go skiing or when you skydive or whatever, right? If something happens to me, who's going to pay for this? And so you can think about the medical bills. Okay. My health insurance is going to pay for that. My disability, right? If I'm doing an activity that's covered under my disability policy, well, that's what's going to have at least some of my income coming in. But then at the end of the day, something like that happens. And again, let's say it's cancer, right? So I get cancer, I'm unable to work, I have medical bills. but I'm also taking a lot of trips to the hospital. I'm you know, eating up a lot more gas, or I'm eating, my family's eating out a lot, or I'm whatever, my kid had something happen. And so I'm spending time at the, you know, medical center, again, eating out, whatever. Right. So it's just all of the other expenses that come with it. So now that you know what indemnity insurance is and you listen to Aflac and the kinds of things that they say, I'm out of work and I'm, you know, whatever, but it's the other expenses that you want to be, that you're thinking about when you do that.
Got it.
So, and you're right. It is kind of like a crapshoot. It's like, well, okay, well, great. If I'm thinking about it, how do I know what to cover? And kind of, you don't, it's less common to do a la carte like that and be like, oh yeah, I think I'm going to get cancer, so that's what I'm going to get. Oh, but then I had a heart attack. I lost the bet.
Right.
But more often it's like a package where it says it's a list of, you know, 100 different things and the number attached to it if it happened.
Understood.
All right. So we've talked about now 7 different types of insurances that should be on your radar: health, auto, homeowners/renters, disability insurance, personal umbrella, indemnity insurance, and loss of medical. That's 7 types of insurance. We're going to get down to 3 more. So if you're listening, kind of hang with us here. Let's talk about something a little less known: long-term care insurance. What is that, Rod, and why do we need it?
Yeah, I'll tell you who knows about it, and it's the people whose parents are in long-term care or have been in long-term care, because those are the people I hear from more than anyone else. And basically what it is, I mean, we usually think about it as for older people, so we'll keep it in that category, even though it could be really anyone. Something happens to you, whether it be age or whether it be something medical, and you need medical attention on a daily basis. And sometimes that could be a nurse coming into your home, you know, once a day or one, you know, a couple times a week or something. It could be going into a facility. But the point is that you have needs that go beyond just the medical care. Again, if you're paying for the procedure, that's the health insurance. But if you're paying for the nurse to come in and help you, whatever, use the bathroom or fix your meals or move from your bed to the bathtub or whatever it is, now you're talking about long-term care. So they have what they call the 6 activities of daily living, which are those types of things that I just mentioned. And the way that long-term care insurance works is if you could no longer do any 2 of the 6 without help, now you qualify for long-term care. And then separately, if you had some sort of a cognitive impairment, then that kicks you. Even if you physically can function and do those things, those 6 activities of daily living, but cognitively you're just not functioning, then that kicks you in and that you qualify for the insurance.
All right. So for parents listening to this, do your kids a favor. Okay. When you get to, you know, Rod, how old do you think I should go get this as a parent? When should I start thinking about signing myself up for long-term? Because I want to pay for my own long-term care insurance. I at some point in my life, I want to go get it. So if I end up in that situation, I'm not putting a financial burden on my kids. I'm also not putting a financial or a burden on them emotionally. I mean, they're going to be a burden emotionally probably, but like taking care of me, right? I'd want to have professional help to take care of me, not over rely on my kids to do so.
Yeah. So this is, as with any insurance, it's too late if you already have problems.
Yeah. I was going to say, I would wager to guess that most people that need long-term care don't have insurance for it, because it's not something that's very pleasant to think about. And it's probably something that people wait too long to think about until they already need it. And then it's too late to get it.
And then, and it's the, again, like you're saying, the very reason why you're thinking about it is actually probably the things that the insurance company would look at and say, oh, well, we're not willing to cover you, or we're going to charge you a lot higher premium.
Right. Trying to get hurricane insurance while the hurricane's coming, right?
Yeah.
You got to do it beforehand.
Yeah. It's on the horizon.
Yeah. Ask me how I know. I mean, I bought a property once and they wouldn't insure hurricane because there was a hurricane coming in like the next 4 days.
Right.
And they had like literally, and I was innocently buying this property, right? And it's like, yeah, sorry, for the next, you know, 2 weeks, we have a moratorium on earthquake or hurricane insurance. Like, well, I wonder why. But no, I don't think it's all lost though. I mean, it sounds like maybe in your 60s, it might be something that you really seriously consider when you are healthy, right? Or maybe even your late 50s, or if you know you're going to have, you know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say go start looking at it, pricing it in your 50s. And one of the challenges with it is, well, let's talk about the different ways to get it. Because you can go buy just a straight long-term care policy, where you're paying the premium and each year your premium will go up based on, you know, again, just the reason any insurance goes up, you're more likely to need it, costs go higher, et cetera. And so it makes it a little bit difficult on that line of thinking to anticipate, okay, I'm paying for it now, I can afford it. In 10 years, will I still be able to afford it? Hopefully. And then the other kind of part of that is that statistically, only about half of people who have long-term care insurance will end up using it. So again, it's another one of those things. It's insurance, right? You could pay for it and not use it. In fact, you might say, well, I hope I don't use it. And yet you've just sunk a bunch of money into it. So gratefully, there are other ways to get long-term care insurance. We're going to talk about life insurance here in a minute.
Yep.
There are riders that come along with life insurance policies that can help cover it. And there are two categories of it. One that is directly long-term care insurance, one that's more called chronic illness rider. But either way, it's tied to those six activities of daily living. And if you have that happen, you're going to have help paying for those expenses from the, in life insurance example, it's actually taking part of the death benefit while you're living, sending you a check, and now you're using that.
Right. And I know that that's a perfect segue into the last category here, which is life insurance. We're going to talk about term and whole. And I know from our previous discussions that you can use your whole life insurance while you're living to pay for long-term care, which is seems like a much better way to do it.
Yeah, if you can. And also the threshold for qualifying for the rider is a lot lower than if you're going for the pure long-term care. Now, that's not to say, like, we do have situations where somebody gets approved for the life insurance, but not approved for the rider because they're concerned about something that's chronic, but isn't necessarily going to shorten their life, right? So that can happen, but in most cases, it's you get approved for both and it's the rider's just there.
Got it.
Well, I think as pilots, we all think we have life insurance because we do through term. But you just kept going on the whole life insurance that you can get. If you haven't specifically gone out of your way, talk to somebody like Rod or Money Insights or a whole life policy, you don't have a whole life policy. So just to be very clear, you know, when pilots see this, they say, oh, do you have a life insurance policy? Oh, yeah. They give it that for free or whatever, you know, part of the contract. That's a term policy. We're talking about a whole life policy, which is not something that's automatic from the airlines as of this recording.
Correct.
In 2026. I mean,
Correct.
Maybe they change it in the future, but I doubt it. And this is, I think, really important. But I just want to touch really quickly on term because everybody basically gets it. It's a rented policy. If you work for Delta, United, American, one of these airlines, and you die, you get a lump sum payment, right? And this falls into the protecting your family and income because you're going to get some big payout if you pass away. That goes away at a certain point in your life, usually when you retire, from my understanding. And that's like a policy that's temporary.
Right. And you can always buy another policy to layer on so that if you were to pass away, you know, your family gets a lump sum payment. But of course, the moment you stop paying that premium, that benefit goes away. If you were to stop paying it a week before you were to pass away, you get no payout. I mean, it's a rented policy.
Yeah.
And I think this is one that a lot of people, like you're saying, well, I have term insurance. I think it's useful to look and see how much it covers you for. In a lot of cases, it's a multiple of your salary. And then just answer the question, is that enough for my family if something were to happen to me? Right. And again, when we have this insurance conversation, most people roll their eyes. They hate it. They're like, but I pay for it and I may not ever use it and, you know, whatever. I get it. And yet, if you just think about that in terms of you've worked hard to get to where you are and the income that you will earn over the next 10, 20, 30 years is the big thing of what you've earned. Well, if something happens to you, that goes away. So it's not only the, what does my family need right now if something happens to me, but it's can be a income replacement for the future. And so that's kind of the way the insurance companies look at it. They look at it and they say, okay, for somebody who's 35 years old, we'll allow them to get up to 30 times their income in insurance, in term insurance or in life insurance. If they're 50, we might only let them get 15 years of, you know, 15 times their income in the insurance. So, but if you think about it that way, and even if you have the term insurance, even if you have a whole life policy, but you pay closer attention to the death benefit and say, is that enough for my family if something happens to me?
Well, we saved the best for last. You know, we've talked about this on multiple episodes so far. I think we've had you and Christian and some other members of the Money Insights team on multiple times now because we love the strategy. And that's whole life. And that's not a rented policy, but it acts more like a bank account that you can load cash into and earn a return on the cash that's in that policy. It's got a death benefit component, but it's also, it can work like a bank account. And as we mentioned, you can use it for long-term care. You can actually use the death benefit while you're still living for long-term care. It's fantastic. So I know we're coming up on time, but Rudd, you want to give us a nice summary about how whole life policies work?
Yeah, and specifically in the way you were describing it, we call it the investment optimizer strategy. We're using the whole life policy as the vehicle through which we're flowing the money, right. But really it's more about the larger strategy in terms of, especially for somebody who invests in alternative assets, real estate or oil and gas or whatever it is, it's not the same as like my Robinhood account where I can drop a couple bucks in and I'm investing, right? I have to save up and build 25 grand or 50 or 100 grand in order to invest in a lot of these things. And so the question is, well, where are you keeping that money while you're building it up? Right. Oh, and then after you've invested that, you create cash flow coming back and you're capturing that money and putting it somewhere where you're putting it. In most cases, people are putting in a savings account or a money market account or something like that. What we do is we replace that. We call it the opportunity fund, right? The place from which I'm flowing all the money through my investments. We replace that with a specialized whole life policy that is, I call it high cash value. In other words, we're keeping the cost as low as possible. We want as much of your money going into the cash value as that kind of bank account, savings account kind of element. That becomes the place that I'm using to go out and invest. But the cool thing is when I'm ready to invest, so I've built up all this money into the account, and when I'm ready to invest, I don't take the money out. The insurance company allows me to take a loan against that money, and that's what I use to go and invest. Why would I do that? Because my money stays there and continues to grow. Right. So it's going to grow on a very consistent basis, whether I loan against it or not. And when I do that, then now my money is working for me in two places at the same time.
And this is why I actually count. We do the 10-30-30-30 strategy. That's why my personal philosophy. And this is why I actually, after, as soon as you start achieving the full cash value of the money that's going in, I count that towards my 10% liquidity bucket.
Definitely.
Because that's your money to grab whenever you want. Yep. It's not like you go apply for a loan and, you know, maybe you find a better rate or something, but you don't, that's your cash value, right? So even banks, when you do a personal financial statement, will allow you to put that in your cash value of a life insurance policy as cash, because that is your money that you can access. So super helpful to investors out there and people looking to have, you know, liquidity available.
Yeah, liquidity is a huge component for sure.
And there isn't a single high net worth person that I have ever met that doesn't utilize this strategy.
Yeah, everybody has it.
Yeah.
Well, Rod, this has been super helpful. You have a tremendous amount of knowledge about insurance, and we would love to share your knowledge and expertise consultation with our listeners. And how can people get in touch with you to talk about this type of stuff and kind of continue the conversation?
Yeah. So through our website, so moneyinsightsgroup.com. So if you go to moneyinsightsgroup.com/pilots, then that'll take you to kind of a specialty page we have for your group. And so you can learn more about the investment optimizer. There's a link there where you can schedule a meeting with myself or one of our group. And, you know, we're more than happy to kind of pick you up where you are. If this is all brand new to you and you've never heard anything like this before, we have a lot of educational material because that's not unusual, right? This isn't the kind of thing people wake up in the morning. They're like, I think I need an investment optimizer, right? It's something you kind of learn about and then you start figuring it out.
And to be fair, I mean, it took Ryan and I, two or three episodes of having you and Christian on really diving into the whole life strategy before the light bulb started coming on for us. So if you are new to this, go back and check out our previous episodes that we've talked about this strategy, because it is a little bit complicated and you have to really understand the math behind it before it starts to really make sense. Both Ryan and I have policies. They're fantastic. So, but I'm really glad that we had the opportunity to talk about all these different types of insurance today. And I really appreciate your wisdom and your expertise on them. And so for, again, for anybody who has questions in terms of their overall portfolio of insurance, I know that you're not necessarily a conduit for auto insurance or health insurance, or, but are people able to have those conversations with you if they reach out as well?
Yeah, I'm more than happy to do that, because as a category, we get insurance and we get the way people think about it. And so we can be a sounding board. We can answer questions. We can help direct people on anything that's on their mind on it. Sure.
Fantastic. Well, definitely use Rod as a resource, everyone, because it's been fantastic working with you. So thank you.
Thank you.
Sweet.
Well, with that, thank you, Rod, for coming on. We'll see you on the next episode. And thanks, everyone, for listening.